This leads to the second play in which the son of Clytemnestra and Agamemnon, Orestes, and his sister Electra avenge the death of their father. They kill Aegestus, a tyrant, as well as their mother Clytemnestra. And that play ends with Orestes being pursued by the Furies because he has violated an ancient code. He has killed Kin, his mother. The mother, she who bore him, as the Greek often reiterates. And the final play ends up in Athens, of all places, where Orestes finds refuge, and it ends with a legal proceeding, which is a bizarre combination of both the law courts of Athens, the popular courts, and the Areopagus, in which Athena, the goddess of reason, the patron goddess of the city, casts the deciding vote to declare that Orestes is not guilty, that a higher law obtains, that he had slain a tyrant, and the Furies can't have him. Well, that's a quick summary of what the three plays represent. What Aeschylus was presenting was an allegorical interpretation of the progress of justice. Starting off based as blood feud in a violent Mycenaean age, which was legendary, of Agamemnon and Clytemnestra, these violent figures, where revenge meets with more revenge. Blood feud is paid with blood feud. And how this tradition evolves into the reasoned order of the Athenian democratic law courts on the Acropolis of Athens on the light of day. And the play was performed at a very decisive point where these judicial and political reforms were going through. And throughout the play, there are calls for homonoia, concord, for unity among the citizens, for reasoned order, for nomos. And what Aeschylus has cleverly done is try to present to his fellow citizens, the Athenians, where this play was presented as a public instruction, that whatever the legal system is in Athens, however these reforms are to be interpreted, that in the end what is important is the rule of law, which has evolved from the ancient blood feud. And it is a brilliant, intelligent reinterpretation of this legend, which was produced at a very important time, and I think goes in part in the way of explaining why the Athenians, who so often carried out political reform that would have resulted in stasis, civil war in other city-states, never quite took that step. That playwrights, that political figures, public figures in Athens, and the Athenians themselves understood that at the end, they were all Athenians, that the rule of law should obtain, and they backed off from pushing the logic of their constitutional changes to the extreme where it would provoke civil war. And that is a point, I think, that is unique to the Athenians, maybe not unique, but peculiar to the Athenians, because when we turn to the Peloponnesian War, we will see that many city-states, the classes are more than eager to engage what the Greeks call stasis, or civil war. And it's tribute that these political reforms went through as successfully as they did and did not provoke a civil war in Athens, given everything else that was going on. There's also another reason why that is, and that is, in Thucydides' opinion, the reason the Athenians were so successful with their democracy was because of Pericles. That's no small achievement, and I do believe that leaders do make the difference, and individuals do make the difference. That's perhaps why I consider myself a humanist rather than a social scientist. And Thucydides, writing after Pericles' death, summed up the attributes of Pericles, and he knew Pericles at his height. The Pericles who came out of these democratic reforms, the man who had dominated Athenian politics. As far as we can tell, Thucydides was born about in about 460 BC, so he got to see Pericles when he was a young man in his 20s. Pericles was at his best, and Pericles was about 60 years of age when he died in 429 BC, and to Thucydides, that was the passing of an age, and no statesman could quite match him. Well, let's take for a moment Thucydides' assessment of Pericles and read an excerpt of him. It comes from the second book of his history, and then wrap up why Pericles was so important for making this radical democracy work. For Pericles had said that Athens would be victorious, and he's referring to the strategy of the Peloponnesian War, if she bided her time and took care of her navy, if she avoided trying to add to the empire during the course of the war, and if she did nothing to risk the safety of the city itself. But his, that is Pericles' successors, did the exact opposite. And in other matters which apparently had no connection with war, private ambition and private profit led to policies which were bad both for the Athenians themselves and for their allies. Such policies, when successful, only brought credit and advantage to individuals, and when they failed, the whole war potential of the state was impaired.